Fantastic. Awesome. Well, welcome everyone to September's LH1 Live call. I don't know if anybody else feels this way, but don't you, as everyone think it was just February and now it's September. It is amazing how fast 2024 is flying, and I'm already thinking about 2025, but we have lots of really cool things kind of in store for the rest of 2024 and the LH1 Live calls. But before we kind of dive into like what's ahead and how LH1 Live looks for the rest of the year, I did want to kind of go over some quick housekeeping things. LH1 Live, this is our ultimate motto is that it's your call. So this is an ultimate resource for everyone. So whether you're affected, not affected, our spouse, loved one, no matter how you're related to LH1, this is definitely a great resource. We have people that have been affected for years and years on here, and people are newly affected. So if you have any questions, please, this is your time for it. Kind of breakdown of how the call works. And so we'll do kind of, I actually have a guest co-host with me today, so I'm really excited. So we'll kind of chat for a little bit with the guest co-host for the first 30 minutes. And this is all being recorded at the moment, and then we'll continue to be recorded for 30 more minutes to the top of the hour. And then we'll actually end the recording. So if you do feel more comfortable asking any questions that you would like, once the recording is ended, we then do stay on the call a little bit longer and open the floor, continue to open the floor up for any other questions. But if you choose not to have those recorded, that's totally fine. There's kind of topics I would say that were kind of hot key topics we would choose to avoid as we're not experts here on this call. So any sort of legal advice, employment advice, anything like that, where it would be best to either one, go to the calls that are best suited for that, like navigating employment or something like that. But we just want to make sure that you're all aware that we're not attorneys, we're not legal experts, definitely not employment experts. So we don't want to kind of have those calls and kind of decisions here. Talking about clinical trials, we choose not to talk about clinical trials just because it's kind of all in the different stages and definitely is dependent on mutations and things like that. If you do have clinical trial questions, we'll choose to kind of have those conversations once the recording's over. But again, not medical experts here, but we can definitely answer some questions in the best of our knowledge post-recording. So I will leave everybody unmuted, but I am hearing a little bit of feedback. So if you know you're in a noisy spot or making dinner or chasing the dogs like I am, please put yourself on mute. So I don't have to mute everybody because it's harder for you to unmute once I've muted you. So just kind of keep that in mind, please. That'd be wonderful. So that's kind of housekeeping. I wanted to go over a couple more things, kind of how 2024 is going to look for LH1 Live. And there's some pretty cool stuff. So like I said, we have a guest co-host speaker with me tonight. I'm super pumped about it. We actually have another co-host set up for the next couple months. And so someone new will join me each month, and we'll kind of bring different topics, and be able to bring different expertise and ideas. And so please make sure you're joining us for that. But just know it's going to change every single month for the rest of the year. And so pretty exciting. Also kind of quick change and update as well. I'll actually kind of share with you the calls that have happened, that have one happened at the end of August and the calls that are coming up for the rest of September before we dive in, just to kind of keep all of these top in mind, especially for the people that have just joined us as new callers. So last Monday, on Monday, August 26th, there was an assistive technology call. Now this call is every other month, and so it's a different cadence than most calls. But if you have any questions on assistive technology, whether it's CCTVs or devices or your phone, this is a great spot to be able to ask all those questions there. So definitely recommend keeping an eye out on the LH1.org newsletter for that next call. And also that happened last week was the spouses or significant others of LHON. Fantastic support call. This call actually only happens twice a year. So if you did miss this one, kind of keep an eye out for it when it will happen in 2025, but great call there as well. And that was just to kind of wrap up August. Then kind of looking forward to September, we'll kind of share with the calls that are also coming up next. So on Monday, September 9th, there is the Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana call. And I did hear someone from Louisiana, so please make sure you're joining that call. These calls are regional, so it's great to be able to join if you have any regional questions that are specific to your area, especially with like voc rehab and resources and services like that. Oh, we can hear you. Just letting you know. Awesome. Next up on Tuesday, September 10th, is the LH1 Affected Women's Call. And this is actually a brand new call to us this year. And this call also happens twice a year. So this is actually the last call of the year. So if that's something you'd be interested in, please join. But it's only for affected women. So sorry, y'all. Next up on Thursday, September 12th, is the Southeast LH1 call. After that is on Wednesday, September 18th. That is the moms of, sorry, moms of LH1 affected kids. And we have kids in parentheses or in hyphens because no matter what, my mom says I'm always a kid, even though I'm in my 30s. So it's kids no matter what. So please join that if you're moms of an affected kid. Thursday, September 19th is the New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania Connect call. And that is a wrap for September. So LH1 Live typically kicks off the calls because we're the first Wednesday of every single month. But did want to kind of share the other calls that are coming up for the rest of September. But without further ado, we will dive right into our LH1 Live call. And I just want to welcome in our guest speaker or guest co-host, Tim Johnson. I actually had the pleasure of meeting Tim. I almost gave you a new name. I had the pleasure of meeting Tim last year's conference. He was pretty newly affected, and Tim actually spoke on a panel that I hosted and moderated with Julie Poncineau on navigating employment. And it's just been an absolute blast getting to know Tim, and so invited him to be a co-host with me. And so, Tim, please jump off mute and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit.
Yeah. Cool. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. So, hey, everyone. Yeah, like you said, I'm Tim Johnson. I'm based in Charlotte, North Carolina. We had that conference there, I guess, 2 years ago, or last calendar year. So I was there for, I was affected just 2 months at that point. So, I was affected May or June of 2022. So that's 2 years ago. My gosh, that's crazy how it's flown. I am from originally from Portland, Beaverton, Oregon. I like to kind of name all these things so I can have a, I already have a connection with a few guys through random places. I went to school, went to college at Pepperdine University and outside of Los Angeles. I spent 2 years in Bloomington, Illinois, Normal, Illinois. That's central, working at State Farm Insurance. And did 8 years in New York City, living in New Jersey, before coming down here March 14, 2020, the day the world shut down for COVID, to a job in Charlotte. That was before going blind. But so yeah, I've been all around, and I love mentioning all of that just because I love connections with people who have are just getting to know people from different areas, and I plan on joining different calls of different regions, and actually I think not I think this is my first maybe ever LHON call, so I'm pretty stoked to just be on, listen to you guys, talk to you guys. You know, my story is 2 years ago, May 25th. I only know because that was my 9th wedding anniversary. I drove to work on a Tuesday, and downtown Charlotte, we called Uptown Charlotte, and couldn't read my computer for the first time. Night before, I probably worked all night. I was working a lot back then. I was an actuary for quite some time in the insurance field. I use a past tense because I don't know if I want to keep doing it. But anyways, so yeah, worked all day on a Monday, drove to my office on a Tuesday, and just like that, it was my right eye first. Still had never been to the eye doctor once in my entire life. Not once, I guess. Yeah, always tested me just at the regular doctor. Perfect 20/10 vision, my left eye at the time, and then you know, couldn't read. I can't remember exactly, but couldn't read, you know, the first number, first letter on the board. With my right eye, on that day. It was my I suppose my initial story isn't as dramatic as others because my brother was that was affected a year or two before me, and so I'd walked into the eye doctor for the first time in my life with just a regular regular eye doctor and kind of told him my issue, and he looked at me like, hey, he had no idea what I was talking about, but also kind of walked in with my own diagnosis. And but and it really just progressed a few months after that. And I saw a doctor and doctors in Manhattan and Philly here in Charlotte. And that was, again, that was, yeah, that was mid 2022. And, it, you know, peaked probably 4 or 5 months, 6 months later. Pretty typical with others that I've heard. Let's see, I have a, that's, I won't get any more specifics, I suppose, on that. I have two kids. I have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, a boy and a girl. And one was born in Jersey, one here in Charlotte, whose name is Charlotte. No relation to the city, but I have proof that my wife wanted that name for her whole life. So coincidence that she gets to be Charlotte from Charlotte. Yeah, that's, let's see. What do I do now? I, like I said, I mentioned I was an actuary for 12 years, I love saying like everyone should know what that means. We get some sort of fancy name for a profession. It's basically just the risk management and stats and finance for insurance companies, calculating risk management. At the time, I was in such a kind of a shock of to the system in terms of when everything happened that within a couple months I went on, and I don't need to get into this immediately, you know, into detail, but I went into short-term disability pretty quickly, and then ultimately like I'm on long-term disability now. It just wasn't working out quickly enough for me in terms of my accessibility and other things that I wasn't able to do at the time. So that was, you know, a larger portion of a year, last 12 months or so, have been, really awesome. And I just kind of getting involved here in my Charlotte community, with, man, just tons of stuff. I got super into fitness groups around town, a lot of church groups around town, a lot of churches here. For those who know or don't know. So it's an awesome place to meet people and to, get connected. Different groups in that regard. Kind of get myself out there as opposed to, first, period of time where, I did not leave the house at all. But enjoying meeting new people. One of my new good friends, is affected for, 8 months. He lives around the corner from me, 15-minute walk, which was connected through Facebook and through others, which is just a blessing, and it's really cool. So I'll meet him in the morning at 5 a.m. for some workouts every now and then. We're just loving being with my kids all the time. Hope they love being with me and making the most of my time at home, my time with the family, learning from you guys, learning from everyone that I come across, expanding my horizons in terms of what I want to do and how I want to go about things. That's 2 years in a flash.
That's awesome. Thanks, Tim. Okay. So I have to ask, so you said you stayed at home for a while once you were first diagnosed, but now you're like out and about, like doing a bunch of things. How did you do that?
How did I get to that point?
Yeah. How did you, I mean, it's hard.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Real hard. Oh yeah. I mean, I jokingly, but seriously say, I mean, I there were days or weeks, I don't know, weeks is probably an exaggeration, but there was periods of time where like, I didn't talk to an adult for like in person. It was just me hiding away. Talking with my little girl was one at the time, I suppose. It was just so easy not to do anything, want to do anything, at that time. You know, I, how I, you know, how I got to that point was, a certain, amount of just desperation in terms of, knowing it wasn't a great, spot to be in, and isolating and I don't, yeah, flat out just, in that place. You know, with anyone going through any, I mean, so I've learned anyone going through anything, just the, you know, connecting with people and you know, the opposite of isolation is going to be the key. And so I just, man, I just chipped away at it one day at a time and one choice at a time. You know, it was really just not, you know, because it is difficult to move about and to, you know, I've gotten, you know, I've gone to the same, like, you know, church group or two for a year, and I've been driven to every single one, and multiple times a week, or, you know, once or twice.
That's cool.
And so it's, you know, people, you know, not, you know, people want to help just like you would want to help someone in their position, and just chipping away at things, getting up. For me personally, it was getting up earlier and earlier. If every day is a weekend, if I'm not working, then it's a choice. It's either for me not to be all rah rah, but for me at some point, it was just going to be either every day is the same kind of sluggish, or every day is going to be a little bit more productive in some way. So I just started getting up earlier and working out and talking with people and getting phone numbers. Man, it's so the simple things of getting a phone number and calling someone or asking that person for a ride. Like, at some point for me, I don't know when, at some point it just became a, you know, in some way you're letting someone else help you in certain regards, you know, and it's good for everyone involved in terms of like getting a ride and going somewhere and things like that.
Oh my gosh, it's so true. First of all, I love that you said you just took one day at a time, and it's so true. Like, vision loss is hard. Well, like, I would think life is hard, so, you know, like, I actually always say this when I'm at the gym lifting weights. I turn on, like, you know, life is actually really hard. And, like, life is hard no matter what, like, whatever it throws at us. And then, like, life with LH1, it's hard, too. There's so much to overcome. So, like, your advice of just one day at a time, and that's kind of how you handle it. That's such a good point, because it's hard to remember to do that. Until you remember to do that and to hear it again from somebody else, it's such a good reminder.
Oh my gosh, yeah, and like I have to remind myself to you know, other small mottos like progress not perfection, or just like 1% increase in capability. Like, you know, me personally, like what me personally, I'm horrible with computers, with how my progress I've personally taken with dealing with technology apart from iPhone. And so like, and it's because it was such an integral part of my everyday life as a computer programmer / finance / actuary / whatever. That one is still bugging me, but like, you know, there was a period of time, again, not getting all crazy on you, where like, I couldn't do I couldn't do two pushups at a time, you know, and I just started doing one more and one more and one more, or whether it's running or it's audiobooks, man, that was like, I didn't enjoy them until I just started doing them, and then okay, fine. And now it's just one of my passions. So.
So how many pushups are you up to?
I do 300-400 a day.
Oh my God.
But that's amazing. Point. I mean, you know, when you don't work, you know, you got plenty of time just to stop and do them.
I don't know.
My son is big into working out. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He's such a good outlet.
But again,
Tim, do you mind me? Hi, Tim. This is Lorenzo in Connecticut. Do you mind me asking your age, or you rather not disclose?
Oh, I'll disclose anything. Yeah, I'm 35.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Affected at 30, right after 33. That was my ninth wedding anniversary. I got married pretty young, 23. Out in Santa Monica. My brother was affected about, I won't talk exactly his story about anything, but 30, yeah. He was 34, 35.
Okay. Yeah. It's been about 2 years for myself, and it affected me at 59, but in that 2 year period, I've probably we have similar experiences and stuff. Now I'm trying to slow down how busy I am, but I'd love to connect with you one day, one-on-one, if that's possible. I don't know how we do that, but
Oh, 100%. That is a good question. I was actually thinking about before the call. I'll defer to Jessica. For probably more comical reasons than anything, I'm not on Facebook. Just because I was that first generation, and my mom eventually got on. No, that's not a reason why. I was gonna put my phone number and email in the chat or whatever. What's the best way to?
I'll connect you guys. I'll connect you guys, and with the help of Alyssa, we'll do that after.
You yeah, can. I appreciate that. Cool. Thank you both. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's awesome. If anybody has any other questions or anything that, I happily will open it up. And I was going to ask kind of like Tim a couple of other questions if anybody doesn't have any others.
Well, I guess I'll just kind of jump on that. My son William is about 3 years in, just under, and he's doing great, but still, he's back to college now. He's doing mm-hmm. excellent. He's having an awesome semester thus far. Definitely better than he ever was before in terms of getting out and really advocating for himself and doing things more. He still asks, though, because we saw him over Labor Day weekend. I wish there was a magic pill. But I know I basically said to him, I think you're going to live life in two realms, wishing there was that magic pill, but also moving on. I'm not sure how anybody else feels, but that's how he feels. And I've been so emotional over the period of these last 3 years that, you know, I've gone through periods of being on a call with the sisterhood and logging off just because I was too emotional. And that's happened a couple different times, but, I keep pushing forward, mostly for him, but for myself too. And, you know, it is what it is.
Don't give up hope. Real quick, my first wife is deceased now, had a rare blood disorder, genetic blood disorder. And it's been about 24 years ago she had passed. They have pills, I say magic pill, but pills now that have alleviated the symptoms and everything like that. It's thalassemia. So it still requires some things, but from a mechanical pump to a pill now, things are possible, especially in these days. Tell them not to give up hope.
I was 55 when I woke up Memorial Day weekend 2020 and couldn't see myself in the mirror. So I lost my job and had to go home, and it took five doctors to figure out what the problem was. Well, I sucked on the end of a Glock a dozen times that year because I live alone. Try being blind and living alone, right? So I was at the VA hospital trying to see if glasses would help. And I said, Doc, you know, I'm not suicidal, but I wish someone would just kill me and get it over with. Well, that's not the right thing to say to a VA doctor. So she asked me, do you want to talk to a psychologist? So I thought, no, probably isn't the right answer. So I said, sure. So I got home an hour later and the phone rang, and it was a doctor from the Blind Rehabilitation Center at American Lake, which is south of Seattle. She called me an hour every Thursday at 10 a.m. for 12 months, and she saved my life. And at the end, she said, I want you to know how proud I am of you. And I'm like, why? She says, men don't accept help the way you have. Well, I don't know what men accept or don't accept. She's the only psychologist I ever talked to. But it doesn't take a 160 IQ to realize you should listen to someone that knows more than you do. So I send her a Christmas card every year because I'm so thankful that she was able to help me the way she did.
Well, if it wasn't for my son's therapist, he never would have been diagnosed. So I get it.
Yeah, I definitely, it's, I think one of the biggest things is that it's everyone, I think it's most important to find the help where it's most beneficial, like therapists and mental health is super important. We actually had a session like that at conference this year. So if you want to check that out on the recordings, I highly recommend. There's so many good resources. And I'm going to shamelessly plug all of the various calls here that there's so many calls because we want everyone to really feel comfortable with where they feel best. So whatever kind of fits you best, there are so many calls just so kind of everyone has a place and feels like they are connected and belong. This call is very general. And so we want that to obviously be anyone's call and everyone's call. But in the sense of like science and kind of talking about that magic pill and all of that, there's one way we'll get closer to it. And that's actually, this is a perfect segue for me to go into the DCP. So Lorna, if you want to share, there is, so research is obviously the most important thing for us to get there. Mm-hmm. Support is how we kind of take over our day to day and how we kind of handle life and kind of what supports us and the people around us honestly are the people that help us get through all that, whether it's a therapist or this LH1 call or your friends and family or all your new friends like Tim met through this community. But while that's kind of all working, Lorna, I'll pass it on to you for the DCP.
Okay, great. Yes, I've been working with Melinda, Julie King, Amy Locke, who is writing a paper about patient care and having doctors hone in on some things a little bit better.
Okay. Do you want to kind of break
to diagnose a little bit more core data collection program? And basically, hello?
Yeah, I can hear you, but you're just kind of cutting in and out, unless everybody else
okay, can hear you. Okay, yeah, I think it's my area in the house. I'm trying to move my laptop. So the data collection program, that's what DCP stands for. And it's a partnership with RareX and basically everyone, not just affected people, but unaffected carriers needs to sign up through this program and just basically put in all their data. It can take upwards of an hour to complete, but then the researchers, depending on the amount of entries they have, we only have around somewhere between 250 and 300 right now, I believe. I'm not exactly sure of the number, but they need at least 500 to 1,000 to really start looking at us. And it, when you think of just one person being affected, but there's that, there's just one. But when you think of including their whole family, which might be unaffected carriers, the mom, the siblings, an aunt, cousins, et cetera, there could be a whole grouping that's missed. And when you add all of those up, even though this is a rare condition, and then you multiply that times even 100 a year, we should easily be able to get to that 1,000 mark. And I guess this is like the thing that my husband and I have grabbed onto, at least for now. And we're trying to help push along as best as possible. I'm even doing some cold calls to a lot of, and emails to a lot of people just through Googling different eye institutes, just trying to pass along the PDF that has the website on it. Maybe I'll put the website into the chat. I'm not sure if that will be helpful or not.
But we need to know how to find it.
Right.
The way I always find it, this is Lissa, is I always go to the LHON.org website and I find the research tab. And then the very first thing there is LH1 Data Collection Program, and it has the link she's talking about, which is lhon.rare-x.org. So it's lhon.rare-x.org, but I can never remember it. So I just, like I said, go to lhon.org, go to the research tab. The very first thing there is that link. And then while you're there, if you want to, there's a series of videos that Melinda made with various people about how it works, why it works, why it's worth doing. There's a tip and recommendation sheet about when you do it, you know, how to simplify it. So there's a lot of good stuff there. And, you know, I think we pretty much all know how to get to lhon.org, the research tab. Boom, there you go. That's what I would do.
Right. And Melinda is always available, pretty much. I mean, I say always, but she really tries to make herself available whenever possible for whomever might have some hurdles or issues in filling out the information. We all don't have a love affair for forms, and I understand that. But if we think about it in the fact that, you know, we sit down and we watch a show for an hour, or listen to something for an hour, that's all it'll take.
Well, I'm on the site and I still can't find where to take the actual survey. I see the program videos and the program tips and recommendations.
The link just before that is the link you want. Before the just above the videos is the lhon.rare-x.org. That's the link you're looking for. Yeah. And then, then you don't go straight to the survey. You have to, do a bunch of consents, because this is like a medically consented database. It's nothing that Melinda sees. It's nothing I see. None of us see anything. It's being held in a, third party, entity. The organization is called RareX. It's a division of something called Global Genes, and all kinds of rare disease groups collaboratively, you know, have their own entry into this portal. And this is how we get into it. So researchers looking at a whole bunch of diseases will go there. So you might look at the questionnaires and you might go, this doesn't seem very LH1 specific. And it's not. It's specifically a head to toe survey looking for anything. And the great thing about participating is everyone always goes, I get migraines. I wonder if that's associated with LH1. And we ask each other that on Facebook. And then people will say, I get tremor. I wonder if that's associated. Listen, is that associated? I don't know. I hear a lot of people talk about it. But if we fill out this survey that was designed utilizing surveys that have been, you know, audited and well-crafted for a variety of disease models, then the data is there. And then if somebody's looking at tremor for other diseases, they'll find it for us. So this is just a starting point. And just to add on to what Lorna was saying, and I know, Jessica, you need to move on, so I won't take you any further. I just wanted to say that I was on a call today with a couple people in the LH1 community talking with a researcher specifically who's trying to get funding to work on a therapeutic treatment for us. And that was his first question. He said, I saw that video about what you're doing with RareX. And I saw last year you had 125 people. How many do you have now? And the number that Lorna just said is what we gave. But it would be great to say twice that, because, you know, they hear that. And if they can drop numbers to funders, then that means they can get in touch with the community when there's a therapeutic. And you know, what they're working on won't be available for a year or two or three. But they want to know when they have a therapeutic to bring to trial. They want to know how to reach people. And right now it's, you know, Alyssa knows a lot of people, but it's not the same as saying, no, it's you've. People have put their information in a comprehensive database that's stored with an entity like RareX, and it's all, you know, stored under the appropriate privacy and security principles. Okay, Jessica, sorry. We'll leave that topic and go back to you. Thank you.
Awesome. Lorna. No, thank you. I'm like, great information. Thanks, Lorna. Thanks, Lissa. I think one of the biggest takeaways too is just kind of talking that there's so much support and there's so much we can do to lean on each other, whether it's our therapists, our community, at the various calls, meeting new friends, but then also the research is super important. So let's do it all. And let's, the more people we can get on that database. And honestly, we've been trying to push this for so long. So the more we can do, so everyone's, we'll jump off the call early today and like, let's all get online and do it. So like, whatever we can do to kind of get that push forward is awesome.
I just created an account.
Perfect. All right. One step closer.
And we're talking carriers and effect, obviously, right?
Yes.
But no, like no point in doing like my wife and kids, right?
No, not your wife and kids, but like if your mom, if you happen to know your mom's medical, if she's alive, you might encourage her to do it. If she's passed on and you know her medical history, like I put my mother's deceased, but I put her data in there because I knew stuff that would be helpful. Gotcha. So encouraging maternal relatives who are most likely to also have the mutation. And you don't have to have had genetic testing. If you have it, it'll ask you to upload it. But there's also a new form that was added where you can identify what mutation you are presumed to have based on what you know from a family member who's had genetic testing.
Right. And if your mom has, you know, sisters who have children and you have cousins, you know, those people would be included as well.
Yep, exactly.
Awesome. All right. Kind of moving on. Anybody else have any other questions? Just wanted to go do a quick shout out for Tim. Like that was such a cool story. It was a super fast 2 years in a 6 minute intro. But anyone have any other questions to kind of bring it back to Tim and or any questions in general that we can all kind of talk about? All right, then I'll have more questions for Tim. So, okay. So Tim came to conference 2 months in, which is a brave, brave soul, because I'm trying to think how I traveled so not that soon, right after being diagnosed, and then came to conference again 1 year later. Tim, how do you do it? What are your tips and tricks for travel, especially traveling solo? You were kind of navigating a lot, I would say, especially being newly diagnosed, you probably didn't have O&M. You probably didn't have a lot of things. Like, how did you just get around?
Yeah. And I literally just, as you said that, I was like, that doesn't sound right. No, I guess I did it a year and 2 months in. Because I was like, wait, last year, two conferences ago was really only 13 months ago. No, I was like, man, I thought I was a math major. I love talking about this just because I was a travel buff beforehand. Which is a lot of the key to it, for sure. Like, I've met people in the community, I've met a mechanic and I can't personally screw a light bulb in, but like, I'm amazed when people can do certain things that I can't do in general, but I always used to travel. I traveled all the time, traveled for work, traveled as a consultant. So a lot of that kind of helps. My sporadic mind, I was talking with someone recently in the community, about like just mobility in general. I don't know. I think this is probably nothing that I can necessarily just like, lay onto the group in terms of here's something you can learn. But like part of it was like, just the confidence of walking down. Well, I lived in Manhattan for 8 years, so I was afraid I was always going to get hit by something. So then you end up being never afraid you're going to get hit by something. It's kind of just the mentality. But once I went blind, it just I just started practicing, like various types of roads and sidewalks. I mean, like I just because like. And it was just building the confidence in terms of like actual travel, which all that is combined into, a lot of it was kind of muscle memory from some of my previous just travels in general. I flown by myself, I don't know, 10, 15 times, in the last 12, 14 months, including Amtrak a few times. I was trying to think of any other medians of travel. No, but for me, like, it's just like a lot of people here, like can't read any of the signs, I can't really read the gate numbers, even though those are pretty large. Once you get close enough, you can kind of see. It's kind of a philosophical story, but also a funny story that I had. One of my first times traveling by myself and this is probably just over a year in being affected. And so get to the airport, not even that early, just because, like, you know, you can kind of, you can count numbers without necessarily, you know, you kind of know where you are, B gate, C gates, whatever it may be. When I get to a gate, I mean, I have personally gotten rid of any sort of, like, I don't know if it's embarrassment or like hesitancy in just asking anyone anything personally. And maybe that's just another good lesson to that I finally kind of got over. Point being, you know, get to a gate. If I think I have a right, zoom in with my phone or something like that, I'm just going up to the person asking, like, is this going to Philadelphia? Every now and then they may look at you like, well, I don't know if they're looking at me crazy, which I guess is a positive, but they may kind of pause. But, like, personally, from what I learned from airports is they are one of the most accommodating places there are. Now, I'm sure there's always going to be stories, but anytime I've ever even broached the subject, you know, of I'm vision impaired, like I've been asked if I want to be escorted places. And one time I said yes, because I really didn't know where it was. But in this case, my first time, I remember, you know, I asked in the course of leaving my Uber to getting to my gate, I probably asked five people for a small direction. Either it was, is this TSA pre? Is this, is this going to Philadelphia? Like, you know, I had to print out my boarding pass and set up on my phone. I was like, what seat am I in? Anyways, point being, my first flight I flew on, I sit down, I check my, you know, I don't have status anymore, but I just board with group one no matter what. And if you're embarrassed about that, then you can always just go and tell them I'm visually impaired. Can I get on first? And I've done that two or three times, and they not only don't care for me, but they always let me. Otherwise, I just go with group one. That is not a legal advice or airline advice, but I just do it because I actually have a legally blind on my license anyway, or my ID. So if they really want to, anyways, I was group one. I go to my row. I check my row 15 different times, you know, staring at a number right next to my face, you know, make myself look as obvious as possible. Anyways, it's like row 15, middle seat. In the window, some dude sits next to me. Everyone starts piling in. And then my first flight ever, I kid you, after me, I'm stressed out about sitting in the wrong seat, not doing this, not doing that, blah, blah, blah. And three people around me were not only in the wrong seat, but we're like five rows off. And I'm sitting there just like laughing at them and at myself because of how stressed out I was the whole time about getting something wrong, getting a number wrong, getting the letter wrong in my seat, window aisle, whatever it may be. And all these people who can see perfectly were in, like, not even like in the right section of the plane. And that kind of like gave me like a little like switch in my mind. Like, first of all, just ask someone to get it right. You know, I've taken Amtrak trains three times out of Philly, arriving in like Newark Penn, which is, you know, a beautiful place in America. If you've ever been to Newark, anywhere in Newark, New Jersey, but, like, that's really train stations are pretty tough, like compared to an airport, which is very organized. And you know exactly what plane's going out of when of where. Trains are always changing term. You know, they don't know what train or platform you're getting on to last second. So I just ask. But that first flight was like, dude, nobody knows. No, people get things wrong all the time. And so that kind of the mentality of be confident where I'm walking, and then if I'm confused or don't know, then I'm just asking literally anyone, and it always works out. I don't know. That's my experience so far.
Totally. No, I mean, I'm 11, 12 years in being diagnosed, and I do the exact same thing. But I'm going to knock on wood that I have really good luck. My last two times at the airport asking for help, I'm a pilot. So then instead of going through TSA pre-check, I went through the pilot line, which was even shorter. And then the pilot walked me to my gate, but it wasn't his. He was just going to work. But it's a blast, you know, like it's an absolute blast when you're like as a blind person walking with the pilot through all of security and kind of checking everything. And then, I mean, gosh, no one knows the airport better than a pilot or than any airline employee. So that's really what I do. And it kind of makes it super easy. But yeah.
Forgive me for butting in. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
So I'm at the rare X point where it's asking me to choose the type of research I want to be involved in. General or health, medical, biometric research. I don't really know which one to select.
I think there's an option that's broader. Is there an option
General, this is the broadest type of research.
So I think the guidance I've heard from RareX is if you're not concerned, that gives your information to the most potential people possible. There are some people who say, well, I wouldn't mind if my information went to like a university type person, but I wouldn't want it to go to biopharma. If you have that preference, you have that option. But if you don't care, take the more general run, and that can allow more people to get benefit. And you might, give your name, if your contact info, if there were a trial that came up for which you qualified. It's broader that way.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Hi, I just wanted to add something about the airport and traveling, something found, because I had so much anxiety about traveling, and you feel so helpless and kind of embarrassed, or I don't know, isolated, I guess. There's this program that isn't really well known. It's called TSA Cares, and I think it's kind of an 800 number. But whatever airport you're going to, they say to call 70 to 36 hours ahead of time and request a passenger support specialist. So when you either you're at the front door of the airport or you're up to the security TSA like passing area, they will take you through security, help you get through all of it. They'll take you to your gate. They'll take you to your plane. And that's helped me immensely. So I recommend TSA Cares, because I never thought TSA cared. So.
That is such great advice. That's a new program. So that's great. Thanks for calling that out.
Yeah, of course. And I just know that, most of the time I've used it lately, they look kind of like gobsmacked or confused, like whatever this is, we need a walkie-talkie to, but at least it's awareness, it's someone that's like,
totally.
I have my cane with me, but I just trying to get from A to B, and I know it's just over there, but like to me, it's, I have no idea if you're in an international airport or a small airport, or if you're walking into a bathroom, or if you're walking into a different plane, or so, yeah, the whole, like, getting over the hump of asking for help. And Jessica, I know that we talked to a couple of conferences ago about blue. Like, we see blue very well. So that was a good segue for me to tell them, like, you're wearing the perfect color for me today because I see blue very well. So that was just kind of a
I love that
thing, yeah.
I have something to add,
Yep.
Jeremy and Omaha, Tim, you and I have eerily similar stories. And I just now have heard someone else say the same thing. I've been telling my wife and kids, I see blue, like really vivid blue, and I don't get it. So that's very interesting you said that. But on the travels, I don't know. Well, I don't know. I don't know if this is true for you.
This is one of the meetings.
Sorry. We can still hear you. If you want to go on mute. So Jeremy can speak. That'd be awesome. Thank you.
Oh, I don't see green anymore. I see orange. That's weird. I don't know if that's a thing. But anyways, about the travel. So you brought up the cane. I found I bucked it for a long time, not traveling with a cane. And when my family was making me and got out and went through some airport TSA checks and all that. But since I started traveling with a cane, it is a lot less of a task to have to explain to everybody because it's pretty much out there. I found that to be pretty helpful. I flew out of the Omaha airport this summer going to see my dad in Panama City Beach. And the Omaha airport. They tried to be as nice as they could, but they had no idea what to do with me, even though it wasn't a big deal. It was like a, it's like a Chinese fire drill, them running around in circles trying to figure out what to do. But yeah, I was going to add that about the cane travel. I don't know if you use one, but I'm happy I started using it when I need it.
Oh, same. Yeah, no, I use a cane a lot of places where I go. It definitely, it takes time to get comfortable, I would say, comfortable and confident with a cane. But now I feel like I just fly all over the place and walk really fast and just go for it. Which is, and the cane kind of gives me that visibility and awareness. What about you, Tim? Do you use a cane?
No, I don't. I never have. I've heard that a bunch from people, which is really cool. In terms of the purpose of it.
Once I finally did, it was a game changer.
Yeah.
No, yeah, awesome. it really is. That's, I've been using that now probably for the last 8 months. The state has come to the house and everything to training. I have two different ones. I have a longer one when I'm out in the field grass area, uncertain of potholes, things like that. It really helps driveways. But it's more of a statement besides helping me for the heights, yeah. Drops and stuff, more of a statement of, okay, yes, you know, I have vision issues and I'm coming. So, and you won't believe how many people are really, really nice out there. I mean, they're asking, hey, can I help you?
Definitely.
Yeah.
So it's just
more for everyone else, you know, because yeah. LHO is such a new territory for everyone. But if you have your cane, I have a retractable one for when I travel. But right when you bring it out, they're like, oh, this is a thing we need to pay attention to. Like, whatever you need, I don't know how to act, but I do know you need something.
Exactly.
We nicknamed mine Moses because it parts the Red Sea of people in the crowd.
Oh, that's a good one. You want to talk about Charlotte's airport or Denver's airport? Because I need two of those.
I was like, plus one on the Denver airport. I'm like, yeah, it's such a busy, but that's where I find the pilots. I'm like, hello, pilot, take me to my gate, please. But yeah.
Yeah, well, that is, I admire you for that.
Well, it's
He's
tricky.
Also right? Flying your plane. So.
Right. Well, so, but with Denver, I mean, it's just like everything, right? Like, I know everything, Denver airport, I'm like, the A terminal, the B terminal, and the C terminal, they're exactly the same. So it's not like you have to know, if you know one, you know all, and you know to go right and left. And then I just ask someone, like, I'm looking for 65, do I go right or left? And they're like, you go left. And then I just, I don't know, go left for 5 minutes and then ask another person.
I know. I even had a golf cart ride. This was like a week and a half ago. And I think it was her first day.
Okay.
I know. And she didn't really speak English, which is okay, but I had my cane and I just wanted to make it to my next flight because I had a short amount of time. And she was like, did you, the bathroom? Or she was on the phone. I have no idea. And I was just like, so I'm visually impaired. I'm like kind of yell talking in the backseat. And she was not speaking English and was like, do you want to get off here? I'm like, I don't know where here is. I could use the bathroom, but I want you to take me to my gate. Yeah, so it was interesting, but like if you don't start the conversation, then they're never gonna like learn that this is a real thing. Like it's not a questionable disability. Yeah, like this one was a whole like flight change. I don't know exactly what happened with the plane, but he was like, "So what do you need help with?" I was okay. Thank you for asking. I need help going to my seat to make sure I'm in the right seat. I need to make sure I can get off the plane to my next plane. But no one's ever like responsible because it's in someone else's hands. So it's like the whole like getting over the hump of talking about it and being confident in talking about it. Because that's what their jobs are, right? Like someone's got to be capable of.
Yeah, totally. And that's like, that was, yeah, I mean, it's that was certainly my, I don't know, that was one part of my epiphany story was just like, was finding any way to get over that. Then certainly not all roses. Like I lost my family. The last time I was at Charlotte, they were, they left like, they were like, I left often after like, what, 8 feet in front of my face. For yeah. like, it, and so it's certainly not all roses, but actually, it's actually maybe easier when I travel by myself sometimes because my kid just starts running, but it's only, it's only half a joke. But, the,
that might be your fault.
Yeah. that might be true. The other one, is, the probably and again, like I'm not a handy person. I can't screw a light bulb, but I'm decent again at getting around by myself. And Ubers are still not the greatest, but by far the worst is usually at an airport or like obviously any busy place. The simplest thing that helped me, especially whenever I arrived back in Charlotte, is just telling the driver where you are, right? Like what pillar, or just pick either the first pillar or the last pillar or whatever. Right. Door. Pick either the first or the last one and tell them that's where you're going to be. Has been like, and I was like pretty arrogant, like, oh, I don't need it. I'll just go like meandering around these 50 cars till I find it. But then I do that every time with every airport I'm at. Really any location. And I screwed up big time last time I was at, it was actually at Newark Penn Station, the train station, and I just picked the wrong pickup, and it was another instance of language barrier and things like that. So it's going to happen, but like at airports, just me in the little text, which, you know, can be hard in general and to begin with, but you know, that still takes me some time even, but like the little text message of like, dude, I'm at the last, or I'm at the first, or I'm at this exact location. Then normally it's pretty easy to narrow down like size of car, color, etc.
Also, yeah. Tim, I think it's a great way to say, hey, I'm wearing a green hat, a black mm-hmm. shirt. You know, I'm by myself or I'm with three people or something like that also helps. Yeah. But I agree with you.
Totally.
Yeah, I would love to find out an easier way to not put myself or anyone with LHON in any kind of like sketchy situation or danger, that you're like already giving away way too much information that you don't really know, or you jump in the wrong car, which I've done before, or they're parked across the street and they're like, yeah, I'm right here, I can hear you on speakerphone. I'm like, I can hear you too, but I'm not crossing the street because I can't.
Yeah.
So if we could find out a way to.
And in my experience, like I've had a dozen of those, and it's whatever. I'm not going to try to give really advice at all. For me, it was just like, all right, move on from it. Like it's going to happen. Try to remember that happens to everyone. It really does. Like people are not smart in this world. And, even people who can see and things are going to happen. I just try to move on as quick as I can. As simple as that sounds, like I got super frustrated one recently, and it's like, all right. I mean, yeah, it's like they're not perfect either, and so I just kind of move on. But that's the basic thing that helped me.
This is Lissa. Have either of you used Aira to help you find your Uber? I haven't. I don't know personally, but my understanding is that if you engage Aira in the process, they can be helpful in ensuring you do get to the right Uber. I don't know if anyone on the call has used Aira.
No,
I haven't used Aira, but I'll FaceTime a family member and put it on, turn the camera around and kind of use them like Aira would.
Right. Yeah, I have done that as well, but I guess I haven't made the leap to Aira or to, what's the other one? Not seeing AI.
Be My Eye.
That one.
Yeah, but Aira actually, they actually have a contract with Uber, so those are super connected, so that will work. It's really compatible, but both of them have safety features. So I actually, for Lyft, I'll say like, hi, my name is Jessica, I'm visually impaired, call my name out loud. And then, so 100% of the time, they'll come, actually knock on wood, 100% of the time, every driver will scream Jessica. And if they're across the street, they'll see my cane and they'll be like, oh, okay, I'll come to you. So I think it's just kind of back to like the asking for help and kind of making that really widely known. And then for safety features, Uber has where they have to do a code. So even if you got in the car and let's say you got into the wrong car by accident, Mm-hmm. If they didn't give you your code, then they wouldn't be able to actually start the ride. Okay. So that's with Uber. That's really helpful. Lyft has something similar. So even kind of adding those safety features just to kind of protect yourself. I also, in both apps as well, there's a safety feature where you can share your ride. So, I always share my ride with my mom and brother past like 9 p.m. until 6 a.m. So most of the time I'm going either home from our friends or I'm going to the airport. But they always get my kind of whereabouts whenever I'm traveling in those time frames, which you can do it always too. So there's a couple layers of security you can kind of put for yourself. So someone always knows where you are and you're getting to the right car.
Real quick, you said initially on the, when you first book it in that number verification, I just started taking an Uber recently, the past couple of weeks. You said there's a number verification?
Yeah, so you can go into your Uber settings under security, and you can, it's called like code or number verification. And it's great. I mean, I have friends that are not visually impaired that use it. And so you sit down, they'll be like, oh, you're Jessica? And I'm like, yep, I'm Jessica. They'll be like, what's your code? And I'm like, 1234. They have to type it in before they're even given directions from Uber. So no one's going anywhere.
So is that for Lyft too, or just Uber?
Lyft has something similar. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but it's something similar. But I know Uber's just came out with that, so and it's great.
So when you have to put that setting in there, so anytime you ask get a ride, it'll generate that number, and you give that to the driver, or he's going to give it to you.
You give it to the driver because then no one else can take your ride, and
Well,
because they could be like, yeah, Jessica.
I've run into the name game before where I get in, I'm like, what's your name? And they're like, what's your name? What's your name? I'm like, no, you tell me. Because I don't want to get into a stranger's car.
So no,
that would take that out of this.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes the name game out. Plus, I mean, that's when I'm like, I'm visually impaired. What's your name? Who are you here for? If not, then I just get out. You know, like, no Uber ride for waiting 15 more minutes is worth it.
Right.
And Jessica, I like how you said the power of the cane. You know, you hold the cane out, and as they're pulling up, they know you already texted them and let them know, and they know how to find you easier that way.
Oh yeah, like they're looking for me, but then they're also like you guys, like everyone's kind of sad. Like everyone's so nice, so I've never had to like cross the busy street. They always kind of slip around, so I'm always getting on the right side of the street. Most of the time they are like, okay, I'm lined up with a door, and you just have to walk straight. And I'm like, sweet, thanks. Like I can see it, but it doesn't matter. Like they're just going above and beyond, which is so lovely. And
people are great. And someone said earlier in the call, people are looking for opportunities to help out. You know, it's also interesting to see people find joy in assisting. And
yeah, helping.
I want to echo what Tim said. You know, ask for help and then be afraid. Don't be afraid to fail because, like he said, so many people fail around us all the time. You know,
true.
Right, and they can see.
Yeah, exactly. It's like we don't need to. Everyone makes
what's
a mistake.
What's their excuse?
And, yeah, exactly. We hold ourselves sometimes.
Well, Jessica, you exude like hopeful happiness. And you take it with you everywhere. So do you use the app Oso? It's like OSOS.
Okay,
across the street.
OKO.
Okay.
I don't personally use that app, but I've heard great things about it. And there's often I know there's a couple of videos on OKO. Actually, Rob Packard is a huge advocate of that app. Highly recommend.
But it doesn't work for stop signs, so
that's true.
Yeah,
and people that don't stop actually at the stop sign.
Yeah, when they like speed up when you're walking.
Yeah. One more thing before I wrap up and turn off the recording. I wanted to kind of echo one more thing that Tim kind of shared that I want to bring it back to is that like the little goals and just taking one day at a time. I love that. And I wanted to just bring it back one more time just because it's like, if we can all think about like the little goals, I mean, we're talking about travel and airports and all of that, but like, even if you like get to your gate, I'm like, heck yeah, this is a win. So, and I always, whenever I get to an airport and then they're like, what kid are you looking for? And I'm like, I just found it. This is so exciting. But honestly, like, I'm kind of joking with them, kind of not, because it's a small goal. So, I totally pass on, Tim's advice of taking kind of small goals and one day at a time, kind of as we trek through it. And I mean, 2 years to 12 years, it's still every day. There's challenges all the time, but Baxter people are great. And so I just want to kind of pass on some of Tim's tidbits that he shared throughout the call. But yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Thank you.
Yeah. The only big thing I found out with all that is to give yourself extra time when you're planning stuff.
True.
You know, just for those
more time for coffee.
And yes. To be flexible. Be flexible.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Totally. The other accessibility thing, people, I don't know if they're aware of the also grocery stores and other places that you can't call ahead of time and ask for assistance, that you'll be going there and then they'll say, come to the front desk or get, you know, assistance at the front desk, and they'll assign you someone to go shopping with you and things. So that's another way, another accessibility thing that.
Do you grocery shop?
Locally here, there's a couple of mom and pop shops I, you know, call still, and they've been very nice. I've heard Stop and Shop, other places will do it, but call them. You'll know right away if they'll assist you if you call and ask for the front desk, you know, the assist at the desk there.
Can you throw something out there about travel?
Yeah.
Cool. I was at the conference in Cleveland. Was diagnosed in April, been having symptoms since November. But I think I remember a couple of you guys might remember me. I have the, I just got the Ray-Ban glasses. Those have been a huge help in airports, which I didn't even know till the day before I flew out there. I've been to the Denver airport enough times. My brother's family lives out there. And I asked the Southwest, I told them I'm visually impaired. Where's gate C-43? It's like, oh, it's past McDonald's, which I know where that is. But again, I can't read an airport gate, but I looked at with the glasses, just, I try and test them, see what they can do, what they can't do. And I said, hey, blah, blah, blah. Like, what am I looking at? And it says, oh, you're looking at an airport gate, specifically C-43 to Houston. And I didn't know they did that. So I was like, my gate is C-44 to get to Cleveland. So that's been a big help. It won't read documents unless I pair it with the Seeing AI app, but signs like that will read. When I got to Cleveland, I was trying to find baggage claim. It wouldn't read that sign because it had like 9 different directions on it. But this lady saw me. Sign. Yeah. And she's like, oh, you look like you need help. I was like, yes, I do. So she brought me over to baggage claim. But yeah, they've been like a big help as far as getting airport codes. Didn't really help with the Denver baggage claim all that much because that's a nightmare, but. Most everything else, they've been really good.
You said these are Ray-Bans?
Yeah, they came out actually 3 days after I got my diagnosis. This tapper I work at, this guy who's been coming there, I've been there 7-8 years, but he's almost completely blind. He had got the glasses not too long before that, and he started telling me about them and said they were a life changer. Like, they'll read off like a chalkboard in front of like a bar. They'll read off, like, they won't read off, like I said, they'll only read off a document if I pair it with the Seeing AI app, but it has the bone conduction speakers in the back where, like, you're the only one that can hear what it's saying. So it's much less, like, obtrusive. And if you're in a grocery store, so I'm trying to see, like, you know, how much a can of corn is, something like that. But yeah, it'll read things right back to you. And it's another thing too about with Southwest, I flew out to Denver again last month. And if you're visually impaired, they offer pre-boarding for free. So.
Oh, yeah. I always go to the front first.
Yeah. So.
Cool. Yeah, thank you.
All airlines. I love the Ray-Ban idea. I'm like, oh, you're almost
coming. Oh, my God. I'm sold.
The base ones are. Oh, go ahead, sir.
What version do you have?
I have the transitions, which are like $349. There's just clear ones that are, I think, $299 on the sunglasses or $329. But it's the first generation, too. So they're going to keep. Improving. I'll ask a question sometimes. I don't know that yet, but I'm still learning. But it'll tell me what color.
Get sponsored by them or something.
I've actually been thinking about that since the conference, which I know I talked to a bunch of people about it. And I'll be like, oh, you're the Ray-Ban guy. I'm like, yeah, I'm not getting paid yet.
Yeah, get an Instagram.
Call is being recorded and you can pass it on to Ray-Ban right now.
Yeah, it was. But when I landed in Cleveland, I was trying to get a lift and I had to go to door number or entrance 3 and I'd set my backpack but down by number 4. So I'm waiting for this lift. It's raining. But I messaged the guy, say, hey, I'm visually impaired. I'm by door number 3 right out in front. And the dictation, which is usually great with the meta glasses, it can like read text and all that back to you too. It said I'm by Dorothy and he's like, Dorothy. And I'm like, sorry, again, I can't see, but I have 4 pieces of luggage. And he's like, I'm right there. And I'm like, again, I can't see. So. So finally he pulls out, he's in the street, and he's yelling at me. So I walk over and I was like, oh, I had a backpack, which I had left. Which I had my Ray-Ban, it had the glasses case in it. And he's like, are you wearing it? I wanted to be like, are you the one that's blind or am I blind?
But oh my
God. Like, no, I'm not wearing it. So luckily I ran back over there in the rain and it had been sitting. It's an unattended backpack in front of an airport for 10 minutes. It was still there, but.
Yeah, if you see something, say something. Isn't that what they're saying?
Yeah, but like everybody's been like super, like Tim was saying, I remember meeting Tim at the conference. Asked for help. I was drinking with Chris Lawton at the hotel bar after, and we were both saying that like our moods were better post diagnosis because you realize how much people actually do want to help. So it's a good thing.
Totally. I love it. Thanks for that, guy.
Yeah, I've been watching the Blind Life. And on videos, and the guy does a great job, and they were showing the Meta glasses, and I thought there was another generation. Maybe he got an advance on that one there, so I'm going to check that out, but thank you for sharing.
Oh, you're welcome.
That's awesome.
Ryan here. Has anybody done any solo traveling to a different country, like, that doesn't speak English?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
How do we do it?
I don't know. You can do it. That's my question. I want to go to Japan for a couple months, but I'm a little nervous.
Well, I filled up 7 passports in 30 years traveling. The only continent I haven't been to is Antarctica. Well, so not since I've lost my vision. Right. I don't frankly expect to get on an airplane again the rest of my life.
I have used Google Translate recently, though.
I was in Sweden when 9/11 struck. And as far as places being stuck, it was a pretty nice place to be stuck, but it was hard being away from the United States.
But you could see then, right?
Pardon me?
You could see then, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
I post that question in the LH1 Facebook page. I'd be super curious. I'm sure there's plenty of solo travelers that have done it. So I'd be curious to kind of crowdsource and get information there.
But Google Translate worked pretty well the last time I used it.
There's also one translate called, I think it's GX or GX Translate, and it can actively translate based on, reception, actively translate to different conversations, different languages.
That's cool.
I've only used it locally, though.
Yeah, I would love to find out.
That's a good way to test yourself, though. Yeah, yeah.
I do like how you're going for the most non-English place possible.
Oh, I was there with my brother last year, and literally nobody speaks English there. Like, maybe 1% of them do, or less. Probably.
You're not going for all their good looks, sadly. Sorry, a little blind joke. can I fit in one really serious thing at the end of this thing?
Yes. Do you want to be recorded or not recorded? Because I was just about to turn off the recording.
I'm not going to say anything that's going to put anyone in jail. But I just want to ask about if anyone has sought therapy through their visual impairment going blind, whether that's like past trauma, current trauma, all of it, or how to deal with moving forward. Because I've seen a few therapists and they wanted to more hear about just like my fun travels in life. And they were like, oh, wow, that's cool. You should see a specialist. So I would love to find a specialist, but I don't. For one, we're on limited income. Two, we're limited moving around, traveling. And how will I know if this person is going to be able to... I just need to sort through it, right? Like, how do I keep, compartmentalize and move forward? Do you have any, is there any of these online app things work? Or, is there a very prestigious therapist we can all call online or on the phone? Because this is a very new, rare, mitochondrial disease that there's no answers for it yet.
There was a talk about that at the conference, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, there should be a video of it. I mean, that was a good, I remember sitting in for that one, or listening to it. That was helpful.
Okay, well, I'll have to listen. I was not able to go this. I didn't know.
Yeah, I think it got posted. I think they all got posted into the, I think there's a YouTube page, but it was like a 40-minute talk about stages of dealing with it and things like that. I found it useful.
Oh, nice. Okay.
But I'm just trying to understand that question. You're looking for a therapist, possibly in Zoom, be able to do it on Zoom specifically for the disease?
I guess so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, because I'm curious to ask anybody else that I know of, I'll ask around too.
Okay. Just because locally, that's hard to find. Just someone that's, I don't even know what I specialize. I specialize in Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy. Like, that's such a new thing to the game that I don't know how to even ask.
Yeah, it took me 5 doctors just to get a neuro-ophthalmologist that knew of the disease and finally diagnosed me.
And then what did they say?
No, we got an answer. And then I still go in right now. Being my third years now, every 5 months or so, just for follow-ups and everything. But that's, again, this is the doctor's herself. Right. But I'll ask her. I'm going to see her next week, matter of fact. So I will ask her about if she's aware of that here in Connecticut.
Lisa, one of the things that I wanted to mention about what Chris said about the talk at conference is she actually spoke directly to your question. In other words, she was saying, you know, first she was sort of making the case about why one would or, you know, would not choose to work with a therapist to address these issues. But then she very specifically talked about different kinds of therapists one might encounter and what kind of specialists might be most helpful in a situation with this, where, you know, it's sort of a grieving issue where you're grieving, but not in the classical sense of, you know, it's not like you've lost somebody through death. It's a sort of an ambiguous loss because it's an ongoing thing. And so she was talking through why a certain kind of counselor might be more helpful. And I'll put that link in the LHON Live in the Facebook group, and I'll send it to you personally also. Okay. And it's also in the conference YouTube videos. But you might want to listen to what she has to say. And then one other thing I just want to throw out there is Melinda Marsh and John Coughlin did put together a grant request to Global Genes, and they were one of like 7 who received the grant out of like 70 applicants. And the request was to put together a booklet to give a therapist so that what happened to you wouldn't happen to you. In other words, instead of wasting your precious time and money, you teaching them about LHON, they found a therapist who has been interviewing various people in the community, has been on some of the calls just to get a sense of what the experience is in LHON, and then just developing a relatively brief booklet that will briefly say kind of in general, what is LHON, and then therapist to therapist, she's going to take what she's heard people say about what has gone well and gone poorly in the therapeutic experience. Yeah. So that you could hand it to your therapist and they could see what the community.
They're like study guides.
Yeah. And then maybe there's going to be a little bit about, and if your client is a mom, well, these are the things she might be particularly concerned about. And if she, you know, if it's a dad, they might be particularly thinking about this. And, you know, so, it, and then some resources at the back. So hopefully. Okay. You know, it's a work in progress. I think it'll be done in like October, November timeframe. So it's just something we're working on that I think will be helpful. But
that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that is such a, in general, a hard thing. I don't want to say, I mean, it is mental illness or like it's not covered by insurance or no one knows what they're going in for. They just want help. And so you don't really know how to like order from a menu from a therapist what you need help with if you don't really know yet. And so and they might not know either. And so that, I think that's really cool that they're doing some research and homework to see what, yeah, what we need help with.
Yeah, I think her main takeaway was, after talking to a lot of people, was her main takeaway was sort of grief is like, if you were talking to a therapist tomorrow, you might say, I've been told that people in this community are dealing with grief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, grieving the loss of the life they once knew, grieving the vision they once had, grieving, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. But she said that's her basic message, and thus you would want to talk to, you know, if the therapist says, what do you want to talk about? You know, you might say, well, that might, or if you're trying to select someone, that might be a way to hone in on somebody who works with people with grief, because that's a common issue in the world of therapeutic support, I would think.
Yes. Thank you, Lissa. You're the bomb. Truly.
I'm from Canada, and we have like the CNIB, Canadian Institute of Blind, and they've like offered to appoint me a therapist that only deals with people that have lost their vision. I haven't taken them up on that quite yet, but I don't
Canadian.
Know if, like, yeah. So, but I don't know if where you are, if you're like looking for that, like just somebody who deals with people that have lost.
I'm moving just, to like, Canada.
Their vision. So I know like this one deals with like anybody who's lost their vision, not just people with LHON, but I feel like they would, again, I haven't actually like gone to one yet or anything, but I feel like somebody who just deals with people losing their vision would have probably more helpful knowledge to give and all that. So I don't know if you can find somebody like that, but that might be an idea.
Can you send me your guy?
Again, I haven't taken them up. I was thinking of talking to them about going to one of them, but it's like that this is through the Canadian Institute of the Blind. So they'll like, they just, I haven't asked them too much about it, but they mentioned it. They're like, if you want, we have these people. They deal with just people that have lost their vision. So yeah, again, I don't know if you can find somebody like that, but that might be helpful.
Cool. Thank you.
And this is Lissa again, just a real quick thought on that. I know I personally, when my oldest son lost vision 10, 11 years ago, I thought it needed to be when I was seeking therapeutic support for him, I thought it had to be somebody who understood vision loss. And that's someone that I found, and it did work well for him. But then when my daughter lost vision, like 5 years ago, golly, I think it was 15. Anyways, 5 years ago, I started down that path also, but I found somebody at a lighthouse, but she had been herself had been blind since birth. And so she didn't right. understand the notion of loss, right? She understood vision, lack of vision, but she didn't understand or hadn't lived through the experience.
It is
of
like
loss.
A death.
So it's, so then, you know, and again, it also depends on who you work well with, because we found two possible people, and my daughter met with both of them, and they were very, very different. One was like, here's a box of Kleenex, let's cry about it. And the other one was, okay, yep, that's too bad that happened. What are we going to do about it? What action steps are we going to take? And she kind of met with both for a while and then found the one that suited her better, and off she went. So it's both could work. You know, some of it could be the personal experience, not necessarily.
This is Kimberly, Lissa.
Hey, Kim.
Hey, I've been listening to you. I've got so much stuff going on in my head right now. Great conversations. I think this is therapy for us, 100%, of talking with everybody, at least for me. My sister Candace is here from Virginia with me.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey.
We're both affected. I went blind 5 years ago, and Candace...
12 years ago.
And I like what, you know, Lissa, your daughter did, go find two different ones, and all these different things I was thinking about, where losing your vision from birth is different from losing it later. I think
100%.
Yeah, but I think any person that's lost their vision is still a good resource, but I don't lose.
you're going to therapy to try and then relate to other people. And I don't think that, you know, I do think it would be helpful to have a person to talk to who has lost their vision later in life or at a point not from birth, because then you can relate to that more.
Right. Agree. Like, I was 54 when I lost my vision and Candace was 38. And I didn't hear the gentleman's name that was talking earlier, who was an actuary. I was in insurance for 18 years. I'm like, what an actuary is, and all those different things. And I was wondering, you know, does he want to go back to work at this point, or is he still on the line?
The 35-year-old dude.
Tim.
Tim. Sorry, I had a kid screaming, legitimately.
Saying, Daddy, don't go back to work.
He couldn't find his aisle in the airplane.
What was it? I heard, do I want to go back to work?
I used to work for USAA for 18 years when I lost my vision. And I know that you said you were an actuary.
Yeah.
And know that industry, just, you know, because I wasn't an actuary, but I was more of the sales and you know, service part of it. But have you... I think I heard you say that you went and got cane travel training, but what about tech training?
I didn't do the cane travel, but I mean, that's my, one of my big questions is if my local division for the blind services have not been like very helpful for me. But also, like, I can't, admittedly, have not been super motivated on my side either. So it's a combination of both. But also, yeah, I need to get personally. I just need more tech training. Part of my thing is I would it'd be interesting to get with some of the absolute wizards, you know, Jessica and others who've been going through this a long time. Like, man, some of the stuff I did was just so complex, and like proprietary softwares and VPNing to a computer in France that was also VPNing to a computer in China, and like some of these like obscure softwares and all this kind of stuff that like I remember like trying to do it. It just didn't seem like it would like ever be fast enough, and for like a fast paced type environment as well. But then I just don't think I even want to do it again anymore personally. That's just my story. You know what I mean?
100%. It's funny that you say that, because so I stayed working and zooming in my screen for about 6 months until I played Where's Waldo, because I couldn't find that little thing anymore. And then I went on disability, and then I did go and get some training. And after the training, my whole goal was I'm going to go back to insurance. And I'm like, heck no, it's not where I wanted to go. So now I get to teach seniors that have gone blind and how to use their smart devices.
Wow.
Not the best, but as long as I'm a senior, I'm good.
yeah, totally. I mean, and my own, that's a you know, super interesting perspective for sure. And like, that's part of my, like, also one of my like personal stories that I don't think I want to go back to it. And that's why I think this time, and I'm super grateful that I'm on this long-term disability, because it's giving me an opportunity to think of something else.
Yeah.
And like that can be true for a lot of events in life, but you know, mine just happened. Mine's that event of losing a large portion of my vision. I can talk about it very easily to where I'm like, I really want to change up my perspective on what I want to do. I personally am not doing a whole lot, you know, if I have to be fully transparent, I'm not doing a whole lot to get there right now. And that's why I also need I've gotten certain things on lockdown, in terms of my mentality, things and this and that. But like I someone mentioned action. I actually really need to do more pointed, exercises and trainings on various techs. But
you do like 400 push-ups a day, right?
Right. Well, that is
I mean that part's you know, all good, but I mean, I think I guess kind of the overarching story for me is whenever I talk to, frankly, anyone with any problem, because we all know someone always said, you go in a room, put your problem on the table, you'll probably end up with yours and walk out the door.
Yeah.
And it's just like, so I'm personally trying to find that next thing. part of me wants to do something like completely insane, like that only side of people can do just to prove, but also probably not. And just do something I enjoy. Like I want to do something in sports, maybe, honestly, the business side. I don't know, something like that.
That's cool.
You can do it.
Some adaptive sports there's a need.
Yeah. Don't let anything stop you.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah.
I'm 18 months in and I had to give up coaching baseball. And I've just started grabbing back some of those things that I've had to let go of and taking them back. And I'm going to coach again. I've signed on to coach again next spring.
That's
awesome. That's
awesome. Great, Jeremy. That's
so
great.
Man, that's so cool. Where do you live?
Omaha.
Yeah. Near me?
I live in Omaha, Nebraska.
What do you mean? Nebraska? Where are you at? That's where I live.
Are you kidding?
No, I live in Omaha right now. I'm here right now.
Good grief. That's crazy.
Door to each other, too. No.
Give me my address.
Well, at least let's catch numbers at some point. I don't know. And Tim, if you're open to it, I'd like to chat more with you, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Push-ups and stuff.
I'm not doing push-ups. I just had my shoulder reconstructed Friday, so I'm gold.
Yoga.
Take it slow.
Squats. Squats.
I did legs today.
There's always an option.
Every day. Well, just kidding. Okay.
Every other day. We see it. But anyway, sorry.
All right, kids. Midwest kids. All right. Thank you so much.
It was great talking with you. I have to go to a National Federation of the Blind convention meeting. Not convention, but a meeting 4 minutes ago. So.
All right. Well, fix it all for us and let me know how it goes.
We will.
Yeah. Thank you for joining.
Get us Ray-Bans. Give everyone Ray-Bans.
Oh, that is so wonderful.
I'm going to work on it. Get a mass discount.
All right. Before we wrap up, I just wanted to see if anybody has any other questions. Anything else we want to bring up?
Jessica, can you find it too?
Jessica, do you want me to turn off the recording or do you want me to keep the recording on? I just wanted to check in on that. You tell me.
Let's turn it off for a second and I'll just do one last scoop of questions just in case. Bye, recording.